So just before we get started, I see a lot of cameras and mostly actually phones, maybe a couple iPads will come out, take pictures. And if you post pictures on social media, I don't know actually if this is an official thing, but there's a hashtag now and it's just HJA75. So if you post stuff on social media, if you're into Instagram or Facebook and you're posting pictures, Grandpa Flays, it's good to see you. That's the hashtag, so people can look back and find them later if you want to. If you can't remember this day and you want to look at the pictures, that's a good way to find them. All right, so as I look out, I don't know, I just tend to look at this side over here. We're going to come over here. As I look out here, I see a lot of familiar faces, and every face that I'm seeing looks older. I don't think there's an exception, actually. Mine is not looking any younger, and the suit fits a little tighter than it did one of the last times I wore it. But so as you age, it's important to stretch, right? It's important to stretch your muscles, stretch your joints. So at this moment, we're just going to have a time where if you would like to stand, you can. If you'd like to stay seated, that's fine as well. But we're going to have a stretch. You know, it's the seventh inning stretch now. Every little bit makes a difference. Stretch the back, stretch the arms, the legs. Don't go down too far because you might pass out. And the floor is still concrete. So every little bit makes a difference. When you feel like you've done enough, do a little more, okay? You feel like you've done enough, do a little more. Every little bit makes a difference, whether that is with your time exercising, whether it's your time with God, if it's time serving in your local community, if it's sharing your resources, or just taking a break. Every little bit makes a difference. And I just want that to be an encouragement to all of you here, that every little bit makes a difference, and each person here being here makes a difference. So thank you for coming and sharing in this day. And we just have a lot to celebrate. I was originally going to do like a walk-in place thing instead of stretching, but then I felt the temperature and thought maybe we wouldn't move so much. We would just stretch. So, all right, let's have a word of prayer, and we'll keep going here. God, we thank you so much for the gifts that you give us, the gift of family, of friends, of this school, of this community, and this church. And most of all, we thank you for the gift of your son. God, we wouldn't be anywhere good if it wasn't for him. And we would have no hope of anything better without him. So we thank you for sending him, for the hope that we have in him. And Jesus, we just thank you for being here with us through your Holy Spirit. We love you. We love this school. We love this church. We just pray that through our imperfections and inconsistencies, you would shine light, and that those around us who see us for what we try to be, but see our failures as well, that we would just not get in the way of what you're doing. So we thank you. Amen. So I wanted to start by talking about some memories. I know I can't scoot this over very far, Conrad, but it's coming over a little bit. I won't break the cord, though. Okay. Conrad's not in. Oh, no, he is. Okay. Oh, man. Almost got away with it. So our memories are kind of a funny thing. You can remember some random things from when you were younger. For me, one of the more random things I remember was our combination lock to our pool growing up. Why would that matter now? If I could give that space up for something more important, that'd be nice. It was 426-0. It's not there anymore, and the pool's not open, so it doesn't matter if you know it. I can remember being so nervous on the first day of kindergarten here that I didn't know about Wood City, and I hadn't met Mrs. Griffiths yet. But it was the first day of kindergarten. I was so freaked out. I thought, now later I thought I was an extrovert, but I don't know, I wasn't early on. So I remember being so nervous on the first day of kindergarten here that I started crying, and my Aunt Carrie, who was in town, thankfully, she was able to come over to the school, and she brought me an ice cream cone from McDonald's. Yes. It's not the healthiest, you know, habit, but if you're ever having a rough time, that's a good way to help that out. But again, it's not the healthiest habit, but, you know, I was 5, and it would be okay. I can remember sitting in the windows of the fish viewing rooms at the Columbia River at McNary Dam, sitting in the windows there and waiting for the salmon to swim by and say, oh, there's a salmon right there. Oh, that's a steelhead. Oh, okay, whoops. I remember going steelhead fishing with Doug Flays on the Deschutes and not falling in, but always being told you might fall in, so stay back from the edge. I would not want to fall in that river, so it's a good thing. I can remember going to the principal's office here. This is before Mr. Maher and Mr. Foss were here. I remember going to the principal's office to write sentences because I had done something or I had said something, which is pretty like difficult to believe me saying something I shouldn't have said. If you know me, you know that's actually not difficult to believe. So thank you for having me here today. I don't remember what I did or what I said. I just remember being there. And I don't even remember what I had to write, but it was multiple times and like multiple sheets of paper. And I learned the lesson, I guess. At least I said I did. So I don't remember the details of that, but I remember like having to write the sentence. I can remember Naomi Larkin up front Sabbath morning encouraging us to pray for each other because there is something incredibly powerful when we know someone is remembering us in prayer and laying it before the one who always remembers us. I can remember when I got the news. Maybe you can remember when you got the news. You can fill in the blank for yourself. Maybe it was a loved one who had been tragically killed in an accident, or a friend that you were close to in grade school who had something terrible happen to them, or maybe a loved one had just been delivered some terrible news. You remember that moment. Storing memories on the cloud, your hard drive, a file cabinet, on a floppy disk, on a USB drive. In the Bible, when they wanted to remember what God had done, they built an altar to remind them and those who would come through later. When I was a kid, my grandpa Bob was so stoked he got a new computer. And he was so stoked because it had a 40-gigabyte hard drive. And he was so insistent, he's like, look, this will never get full. Like, I'll never fully, like, completely fill this hard drive. And I believed it. I was like, yeah, technology, that's pretty much about as far as it's going to get. 40-gig hard drive. Now my phone, I have to save stuff on the cloud because 128 gigs isn't enough for the pictures that I'm taking of my daughter. There are many things we want to remember. The day that you said, I do, whether that was your wedding day or the first time someone asked, hey, do you want to learn how to ride a motorcycle? I do. Do you remember that? Yeah. It'll change your life forever. Be careful. But perhaps for each one thing we want to remember, there is something else that we want to forget. Our memories are a funny thing. We remember the good with the bad. Sometimes we forget, though. We forget the good memories, and oftentimes we get so focused on the negative ones that it completely shifts our perspective, it completely shifts our view, and it completely shifts the tune of our heart. We can only sometimes remember the bad, the ways we were hurt, offended, or wronged. Our memories are shaped by the condition of our heart. Not only are our memories shaped by the condition of our hearts, but our words spring forth from what is abundant within our hearts. Another aspect of memory is our desire to be remembered. You are not easily going to forget when Damian Lillard dropped that 37-foot three-pointer with the second and a half left in game 5 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. You're not going to forget that because he won the game by 3 points. That's not a spoiler alert. If you didn't know that by now, you probably don't care about sports. And it wouldn't be bad if it was a spoiler. There was a game recently, I won't mention anything from that one though, with the Blazers, because you might be watching it later tonight. Our desire to be remembered. We want to impress people, whether that's our parents or our bosses or our peers, or someone that like maybe isn't really a peer per se, because we wouldn't like approach them for something, but we have this competitive nature to somehow one-up them on something. We want to achieve recognition. Many have a vague idea that they must make some wonderful effort in order to gain the favor of or to be remembered by God. But all self-dependence is vain. It is only by connecting with Jesus through faith that the sinner becomes a hopeful, believing child of God. We want to accomplish something great today so that the next generation will remember us. We want to leave a legacy, and we want to be attached to that legacy in the minds of the next generation after we're long gone. A wise musician once wrote, "Legacy, what is a legacy? It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. By the time a seed has been planted in the garden, the soil has been hoed and prepared and tilled. You've removed the weeds, perhaps tested the soil and adjusted the pH level. You may have added fertilizer, and I think we can thank Nico for fertilizer because he's responsible for the chemistry that goes into that. So thank you, Nico. Without people like you, we couldn't have good gardens and good farms and good food. I saw someone clapping. We're not going to clap. You can thank him later. You can thank him after. But you've added fertilizer, you've watered it, and maybe even separated it into sections for different kinds of plants. This winter, my wife and I planted tulips in our raised bed outside of our living room. We got these tulips from last year's tulip festival. We drove to Holland, Michigan. It's a little bit more attainable in a minivan. Which we had the minivan before we had our baby. We figured it was probably going to happen, so might as well get used to it. So we took a trip up to Holland, Michigan, and my dad was with us. He came out and visited last May. And we were like, wow, these tulips are amazing. I thought they just were like yellow and pink and purple. But they were all different colors, multicolors. There were some that were like feathery and some that were super full. They didn't look like tulips, but they were. And we ordered quite a few different. You had to order like 5 different kinds if you wanted them to ship them to you. So we ordered 5. And this winter, which is a long winter, but this winter, we planted them in our raised garden bed, and we waited. And we waited, and we kept watching, kept looking outside the living room window. Oh, are they popping out yet? It's like, no, because the ground is still frozen solid, or there's still 1.5 inches of snow on April 28 outside. Winter came, we planted them all, and we waited. I chose specific spots to plant each of the different kinds right outside our living room window so we could enjoy them when the temperatures warmed up and the bulbs sprouted. This is exciting, right? You get to watch something grow right outside. You picked it. You chose it, you planted it, you've been watering it, you prepared the land. But, so we kept watching them through the window, and they started to bud, they started to break through the soil, and we could see, okay, we're counting them. Oh, I see three. And Jenna would be like, no, there's four. Wait, which one's the fourth one? And she'd point it out. Oh, wow, there's four. And now we have nine. And we keep looking out there and we keep counting them. A few times they got dusted with snow and sleet. They were kept watered by the rain. They were bulbs we got to plant in hopes of seeing them bloom and brighten our day. That was the thought. But we are here. And the bulbs are in Michigan, and they're about ready to bloom, and we're still going to be here for 11 days. We're at a school, you do the math. That's pretty likely we're going to miss them blooming. Legacy is planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. Now, obviously, that's kind of a fun story. It's not really illustrating perfectly what's going on here at the school. But when we planted the bulbs, we knew which bulbs, which tulips were going to grow, and where in the garden box. We saw on the packages in which the tulips were shipped, these will be yellow and bushy, these will be pink, these will be bright orange and feathery. But if we hadn't seen the packaging, could we have been able to tell what kind of tulip it was that we had planted? Of course. Yes, we would have had to be there when they bloomed, but you can tell a tulip, you can tell the bulb by the flower that blooms. The blossom and the bulb are connected directly. The blossom and the bulb are the same organism. Turn with me in your Bibles to Matthew 12:33-37. Matthew 12:33-37. While you're doing that, some of us in this room have our preferred version of the Bible, and for varying list of reasons. Some people prefer a particular version, another particular version. Personally, I have come to believe that the best version of the Bible is the one that collects the least amount of dust, and through which God is speaking to you in order to heal your heart and transform you from the inside out. That said, I will be reading from the ESV today. Not that it's my favorite, but it's the one I have with me, and when I do Greek and Hebrew, it seems to compare pretty closely. But again, whichever one collects the least amount of dust, I think is probably the best one. But I'm also a millennial and very postmodern, so. Matthew 12:33-37. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. This is Jesus talking. He's talking to the Pharisees and the scribes. He's referencing what they had just told him. He had cast out a demon, and they were talking amongst themselves and saying, well, who is this? In whose name does he do this? It must be Beelzebub, which was not a good person or not a good being. So Jesus is saying, no, like, it's either good or it's bad. The thing that I just did was good, so it can't be from a bad source. So that's what's going on here. And he calls them a brood of vipers. How can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good person, out of his good treasure, brings forth good. And the evil person, out of his evil treasure, brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Man, words? If we are to be completely authentic, our words are a direct reflection of our hearts. The words we use matter. So much so that Jesus said, we will be justified or condemned by them. Our words flow from the abundance of our heart. He's saying here that it is not possible for good fruits or words to come from a bad tree or heart. Our hearts are so intrinsically connected to our words, and our words so intrinsically connected with our deeds. Ultimately, it is our hearts being judged, yes. But because our words and deeds flow from the condition of our hearts, we cannot say to ourselves that while maybe we speak poorly of someone, our hearts are still good. While we sit judging another person, our heart is still good. This is a lie. We may begin to believe that there is a separation between our faith and our practice. Jesus uses strong phrasing here, though, calling the scribes and Pharisees a brood of vipers, calling out what they were doing as hypocritical and challenging them to repent. There's this idea that some people have that a relationship with God is a list of things. I do these certain things. I do this with my time. I do this with my finances. I do this with my talents. Then I will have a relationship with God. But a relationship is not like a tablet with a checklist. It's more like a table. You sit at this table. You share time and space, real time and real space, with the one who made you, for the purpose of getting to know them and becoming one with them, so your heart may heal and that you may treat others better, that you may worship God more fully, and that you may serve him more fully. It's so not a list of things. Can we be real? Can we be real about that? But you haven't earned your place at Christ's table. If we do what we do for the sake of being remembered, then it is in vain. The only one who we need to remember us has already promised not to forget us. He loved us so much that as part of creation, he created rest, the Sabbath, a time in which we could recenter our focus on him, what he has done, and the reality that my innermost core value comes not from what I do, but from the one who has made me and who loves me. In this passage that we just read, Jesus rebukes the Pharisees after they try to trap him. And this is a common response from Jesus in the books of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew 23, verses 1 through 39, Mark 12, 35 to 40, and Luke 20, 45 to 47. They taught about God in order to protect the tradition of their teachings from the Torah, but did not truly love God. They expected people to check off the list of to-dos on their stone tablets, but did not invite those people to take a place at their tables. Jesus saw the effects of this and turned the tables, condemning their hearts, hungry for money, and desecrating the temple. Rather than doing what we do for the purpose of being remembered and out of a sense of competition, what happens when we do what we do for the purpose of restoring relationships and a reality of togetherness? I look at this room, and there's not a single one of us who's not in need of restoration. There's not a single one of us who's not in need of being restored. And if you think you aren't, you're already a couple steps behind. What happens when we look at each other through the eyes of Jesus? We recognize that people who have healthy hearts We'll speak well of each other. They will do good things for others, and we'll celebrate knowing that because God has remembered us, we are free to serve others without competing for recognition. When we affirm someone or offer them a compliment, they most likely will return the word and compliment us back. But that's not why we do this. I hope, I mean, maybe it is, but I hope it's not. That's not why we compliment somebody or give them an affirmation. This is not the motivation for blessing someone with an affirmation. The reason we affirm others, the reason we invest in them, the reason we speak light into their lives is because that is what we are called by God to do. When we affirm others, whether in a classroom here at Hermiston Junior Academy, or you affirm the person who's loading your groceries into your car, or you thank the person who has served you for years at the local tire shop, when you affirm that person, you're speaking directly to their heart. And the heart is what needs healing. And you can be part of that healing. And this is a way how to do that. We can see the image of God in them, and we are participating with God in the process of redemption. We affirm another person by calling out what we see God doing in and through them. We are empowering them to turn their eyes to Jesus, the source of all things good in our lives. What we recognize in others is what grows. When we recognize the good in others, that good begins to grow. And these words go directly to the heart. We are created for relationship with our Father in heaven and the others who are made in his image. And a spoiler alert, that person you're holding a grudge against right now is also made in the image of God. Let that sink in for a second. Like, their value doesn't change just because they offended you or hurt you. Sucks. I'm sorry that that's happened. And grief is real. But I think forgiveness is a much greater example of how to respond. Christ came all the way to this earth to forgive sins. And I think that's a model that we can follow. My reality today is this. How am I going to leave it better than I found it? When you're in Pathfinders, anybody here do Pathfinders? Yeah, of course. It's kind of a dumb question in this room. You do Pathfinders, what's the first thing they teach you when you go camping? It's probably, you know, have a good quality tent. Or make sure to trim the trees down where you're going to set your tent up. No, I don't know if it's the first thing, actually. It might not be the first thing. One of the earlier things they teach you is to leave it better than you found it. So if there's trash, you pick it up. If there's, if somebody left their old tennis shoe on the ground, you find a place for it that's not out in the nature. You stay on the trail and you camp where there's a campsite set up. You leave it better than you found it. So how am I going to leave it better than I found it? And where can I do that? Well, I can start with my home. Physically, we've done some renovations around our house. We redid the kitchen, and that was perfectly timed because Olivia was born like a couple weeks before we were done with the kitchen. So you can start with renovating your house. Sure, you can start by pulling the weeds around your house. Leave it better than you found it. I can take this into my workplace. If I see somebody's really in a cranky mood, my natural response is probably to avoid them. Most of the time, that's probably the safest response. Someone's having a really rough day and they're super upset. You don't want to be like, hey, I'm going to pray for you right now. Because if they're mad enough, that might really offend them and they may not ever come to you and talk to you about anything later. Well, what can I do at my workplace? What about my memories? How can I make those better than I found them? I think sometimes looking back is hard for us to do. Maybe for some of you, when you were here as a student, maybe there were bad things that happened to you. Maybe somebody bullied you. Maybe somebody continuously picked on you. Maybe the teacher didn't prioritize time with you. Maybe somebody visited and gave a week of prayer and said something that was really mean to some of the kids who were like being noisier. But what can we do to leave our memories even better than we found them? I think it's to imagine and to go back and see where God was at work in those places, to look for the light that was shining through the brokenness that had happened in myself or in the other person there with me. That doesn't change reality. I'm not saying that changes reality. That'd be really weird, and I wouldn't ever teach that, especially up here. But if you can imagine in the past and remember and look for where God was at work, you might be surprised with what comes out of that. When I realize that the God who made heaven and earth and all that is in it also made me and remembers me and seeks to redeem me, I no longer do what I do for the purpose of being remembered or recognized, but for the purpose of joining up with him where he is already speaking light and life into this world. And I believe, flaws included, I believe that's what God is doing here in this school. Since 1948? My math is actually really bad. I don't have an excuse, but I haven't taken a math class for a while, and I just say, hey Siri, what's 15% of whatever? 75 years ago. 75 years ago. If you write everything and plan to read it all, you kind of get a little lost. I believe that's what's going on at this school. I believe that's what's going on in the schools, in the Adventist Church across the country. And to be honest, I don't think it's limited to this school. I don't think it's even limited to Adventist schools. But today, we're celebrating this school. We're celebrating this community. We're celebrating what God has been doing here. And I think I think it's a virtuous thing to celebrate. We remember what God has done. We look back. We take time to look back and see where he's led us. Then when we're challenged with things in the future, we know that he will not leave us because he didn't in the past. And he hasn't today, and he won't in the future. So how are you going to leave it better than you found it? How are you going to be an encouragement today? This, like today, not like general today, but like here today, like this day, Sabbath, May 4, 2019. How are you going to be an encouragement today to somebody? This somebody might be going through hell, but isn't telling you about it. Maybe they're not telling anybody about it. Your word of encouragement could be just the thing that they need to switch their focus off of their trouble, off of themselves, and onto what God is doing. It's so simple. We know this. We've heard it for years, but it's so simple. A simple act of generosity with our words can shift the focus of one person. How will you choose to speak light into someone else's life? Not for the sake of being remembered, but because we need each other and are called to lift each other up. I just, again, it's one of the most amazing things that God looks at us and knows what we're capable of, and he still invites us to be part of what he's doing. Like, man, if I was working on my car, and I knew that if I invited this kid to help me with it, he'd just lose the 10-millimeter socket. That's the one that gets lost the most, by the way, if you're working on an import. Well, I probably wouldn't want that kid to be helping me. I don't want to lose all my tools. But he still looks at us and our imperfections and our inconsistencies, and he says, you, I want you part of what I'm doing. I think that's huge, and I think that's what we're here to celebrate, what God is doing, and that we've been able to choose to join him in that. I think we're going to have a closing hymn now, and I invite you to join in singing that.